Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The presidential campaign continues with Ohio right in the middle of the battle. This morning, we'll talk about the race and the continued important role Ohio will play in the final outcome. Joining me are Xavier University Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Mac Mariani, University of Cincinnati's McMicken College of Arts and Sciences Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Stephen Mockaby. He'll be joining us on the phone, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation as well. Email your questions to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you all here today. And right here, as we say, in Battleground, Ohio, we can't seem to get rid of these presidential candidates. They just keep showing up, and we're going to see that for a while.
Yeah, we're going to see it all the way up to the end, I think. I mean, because this is a close state. It is absolutely a key state. There are scenarios for both of these candidates in which they could get to 270 electoral college votes, which is what you need, without Ohio, but Ohio is still going to be in play right up to last second.
You agree?
I absolutely agree. I think the, you know, one of the things that you look at with Ohio, too, is that the cross-section that we have here. You go up north in northern Ohio. It's very similar to, the Cleveland area, the Toledo area. That's very similar to where I grew up, upstate New York. You go through the middle of the state. It's like driving through Indiana, and you come down here, and it's culturally different. You know, Cincinnati has got a much more of a southern kind of feel to it than a lot of the rest of the state. So it's, I think it's a good microcosm of the entire country. And you know, the last two elections, it's been critical. I think that's going to be the same here.
Dr. Mockaby?
No, I would agree for sure about the importance of Ohio, and I think you can demonstrate that for yourself if you go online and play around with these electoral college maps. There are very few scenarios, particularly for Romney, to win without winning Ohio. One of my colleagues played around long enough to come up with a 269-269 tie scenario, which is in effect a win for Romney because the race would then be decided in the House of Representatives. But short of that, it's really difficult to see how Romney can win without winning Ohio. So this will continue to be one of the two or three most important states, possibly the most important the rest of the way.
Yeah, Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia came out with an analysis today that had a scenario where you had a dead flat tie in the Electoral College, 269 votes to 269 votes. And what would have to happen would be for Obama to win all of the states that John Kerry won in 2004, plus Ohio, New Mexico. And because of the way the electoral votes in the states have changed since the last census, it would end up a flat-footed tie. And that would be, obviously, you know, no matter whether Mitt Romney wins the popular vote or not, you know, if it went to the House, of course he'd win. But, you know, there would be contested elections all over the country, I'm sure, probably in Ohio. And it would take a long time to sort out.
And if it did end up that way, we would probably have Vice President Biden continue in office, assuming the Democrats right. held control of the Senate. So it would be a very interesting scenario.
Do you think it will get that interesting?
Well, I mean, it's certainly feasible. It's possible. Anything's possible when you're talking about these small margins in very key battleground states. Anything's possible. It's possible that Romney could win without winning Ohio, which would make him the first Republican to be elected president without winning Ohio. There are scenarios where Obama could win without winning Ohio.
Do you think that as this continues, is it still as close in Ohio as it's sometimes said to have been? At one point, Romney was ahead, then Obama was ahead, and then Romney was ahead. Where do you think it really stands right now? People are already voting.
Well, I think it certainly is. I mean, I think it is close. I think it's within the margin of error. I think possibly Barack Obama has a small lead in Ohio if you average out the polling that's out there so far. And but you know, it's obviously not an insurmountable lead. And right now, I think it's going to come down to the ground game and which side can get to their voters, get them motivated, and get them out to the polls.
And that's the real difference that you have between this election, I think, in 2008. In 2008, you had a very disappointing GOP candidate, I think, a depressed Republican base, and a decision on the part of McCain, partly out of financial reasons, to not do the sort of turnout operation that George Bush did in 2004 with the 72-hour program. This year you have Romney, who I think has exceeded a lot of expectations, at least from the point of view of the conservative base, who initially had gone into the primary kind of skeptical about Romney. The other thing is the financial advantage that Romney has going forward. In the 2008 election, down the stretch, McCain was outspent 5-1. It's going to probably be more the order of 3-2 in favor of Romney this time. And that's going to mean a big difference in terms of boots on the ground, in terms of ads, and you know, in the last couple of weeks where those final small number of undecided voters are making their decisions.
Dr. Mockabee, do you agree? Will ads make the difference, do you think, in this election?
Well, I don't think ads will make the difference so much as the ground game that Howard was talking about. And, of course, resources make a difference there as well. But I think that particularly in Ohio, turnout is really what will make the difference. And I think that the Obama side has a very strong ground game. They've been laying the foundation for that going back really years by having lots of local offices in place for a long time. The other thing that helps them, I think, in Ohio is the legacy of the SB5 fight. The battle over that legislation and its eventual repeal was really a galvanizing force for progressive groups and unions. And I think, in talking to people, there's still quite a bit of energy remaining from that. And a lot of coalitions were formed between groups, networks were built. And so I think having that in place also helps the Obama side in terms of the ground game. But Mac is right about the resource difference between Romney and McCain. I think Romney's effort will be, from a resource standpoint, much more like George W. Bush's mobilization efforts in 2004 that were so successful. I guess it remains to be seen if Romney, as a standard bearer, generates the same sort of enthusiasm that Bush did, particularly among religious conservatives. But certainly, as Max said, he's exceeded expectations. And so I think there's a renewed hope among the Republicans that maybe he can swing Ohio his way.
You mentioned voter turnout. A big ruling came out recently saying that those 3 days before the election will be open for voting at all of the boards of elections in Ohio. What's that going to mean to turnout?
Well, I mean, it's going to impact it to a certain extent, not in large numbers. I mean, we're not talking about large numbers of people going out on those 3 days. But when you get into a situation where it could be extremely close, if you can get your people motivated and get them out to the polls early, and I think by Election Day, probably close to a third of Ohioans will have cast a ballot, then you have an advantage. And I think one of the things that Stephen said, that one advantage the Obama campaign has had is that they have had an organization on the ground in Ohio and all over the country, really, since the day after the last election. It's called Organizing for America. It's his political arm. And they have been doing this work quietly for the last 4 years. They didn't start from scratch.
Do you think having those people walking around, knocking on doors really makes a difference? I mean, I know a lot of people, when somebody comes knocking on their door, the first thing they want to do is not answer.
Well, Marianne, I think, you know, they know whose doors they're knocking on, okay? They're not knocking on doors at random. They have databases that have a lot of information about people, about their tendencies, about how they vote, about what magazines they subscribe to, about what they do on Facebook. They know whose doors they're knocking on. So they're knocking on the doors of people who they think they have a chance of persuading or at least pulling them out and getting them to vote. They're not doing this randomly.
And I think on a college campus in particular, you see the effort that's made on college campuses. I think that really makes a difference, because young people tend to be the sorts of voters who many of them are somewhat indifferent about it. They want to vote. They want to be good citizens, but it's not the top priority on any given day. And so by extending out that period of time over, instead of one day into making it 3 days, well, I don't have a test on that day, right? You know, and it works out better for their schedule and they end up going. So I do think for young people particularly, I think that those 3 days will help. Again, on the margins, we're talking about, will it make a difference if this is a 48 to 52 race? No. If it's a 49 to 49 race, it will. And that's when you're running a campaign, you have to run it as if every single vote is going to count. As we learned in 2000, sometimes it does.
Stephen?
Right. I completely agree. And I think I would just add on the point about early voting, I think that the recent court rulings were really significant when you put it in the context of how close the race is, and you look at the margin of victory in Ohio is likely not to be much more than 20,000-30,000 votes. It could be more, but in if recent elections are indication, it's going to be very close. And I think there was a report just a few minutes ago about early voting thus far in Ohio, and the number of early votes is already exceeding that margin. So we're talking about such a close race that even a small shift could make a difference. And then secondly, on your question, Marianne, about personal contacts, about going door to door, Howard's absolutely right about the micro-targeting aspect that both sides have such extensive data on voters that they're not wasting their time knocking on the wrong doors. And there's also some pretty convincing evidence from political science research that shows that face-to-face contact in get-out-the-vote efforts really does make a difference. There are actually a lot of field experiments done that demonstrated this back in the early 2000s. And the parties and campaigns have read that material, maybe one of the few times that they read political science journals. But they they know that face-to-face contact makes a bigger difference in turnout than phone calls or mailing. And so they put resources into it because they know that it will help on election day, or in this case, maybe before election day.
And it's face-to-face contact with people that they can relate to, people from their own neighborhoods, people from, that belong to the same organizations they do, that they have some kind of connection with. That makes a big difference, and that both campaigns try to do that, try to match up the volunteers with the people that they're targeting.
This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about the presidential election. If you have a question or a comment, email it to impact@wvxu.org or post it on our Facebook page. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
Support comes from United Healthcare, helping companies realize the rewards of better health in the workplace. On the web at uhctoday.com/rewards. That's uhctoday.com. .com/rewards.
Support comes from the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber and Humana. You can learn how chamber members like Schumacher Dugan, Wright Brothers, and Q Labs help their employees and their bottom line get healthier with Humana Vitality at cincinnatichamber.com or phone 513-579-3111. Support comes from Nice Lukens. With the resources of a large firm and the service of a local firm, Nice Lukens protects Cincinnati businesses with customized insurance, risk management, employee benefits, and financial protection strategies to fit today's complex financial environment. Nice Lukens is an assured partners company. NiceLukens.com.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about the presidential election. My guest, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson, University of Cincinnati's McMicken College of Arts and Sciences Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Stephen Mockaby, and Xavier University Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Mac Mariani. If you have a question, put it on our Facebook page or email it to impact@wvxu.com.
ohiocampus.org. And we do have a couple of questions already that I would like to get to. The first one comes from Stephen, who says, why does the media refuse to talk about the candidates not named Obama and Romney?
Well, that's always a difficult question, and there's an answer to it. And the answer is essentially because someone named Obama or Romney is going to be elected the next president of the United States. It's been since 1968, since a third-party candidate, George Wallace, actually won electoral votes. If you're a voter in Hamilton County, you're going to walk into the polling place, you're going to see a ballot with five other names on it besides Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. Now, only two of those names, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, and Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, have qualified for the ballot in enough states to be able to get to, theoretically, 270 electoral votes. The rest of them have not. And the media has to make a decision about, what do we cover candidates who have no chance of winning because they're not on the ballot in enough states? I mean, it's a very difficult question. Now, I have seen, in the case of Stein and Johnson, stories about them in the mainstream media. Not a lot, but some. But the fact is, someone named Obama or someone named Romney is going to be elected.
There was a story the other day that the Green Party candidate was actually arrested outside of the debate, trying to get a coverage in, I guess, an unconventional way. It is a challenge to American politics. You go to some place like Ireland. I have a good friend of mine, a colleague, Xavier, who studies Irish politics. And, they have a much different electoral system where, you can offer multiple preferences rather than just one. And then under that system, because it's a kind of multi-candidate system, you can get candidates from a variety of different parties winning elections. In our system, it's a first-past-the-post system. That means there's only going to be one person who's going to get that position, whether it's at the congressional level or at the presidential level. And as a result, there's not a lot of incentive for people to vote for those downline candidates because they don't have much chance of winning. And on the other side of it, for the media, since they don't have much chance of winning, there's not much attention paid to them because people aren't as interested in those candidates when it comes to reading the newspaper or listening to the radio.
This from Matthew. Why doesn't the media, all the questions seem to be about the media today, why doesn't the media call out Romney on his blatant changes in supposed positions on topics throughout the campaign just to attract voters and the lack of evidence to support his economic policies that are at a centerpiece of his campaign? That is from Matthew.
Well, I think the media, if you look at all of the media on the internet, on the radio, on television, in newspapers, every word and every claim that Barack Obama and Mitt Romney has made during this campaign has been parsed to the nth degree. I just think the information is out there and people have looked at these things. You can only put it out there. You can't lead people to it.
Stephen?
No, I agree with what Howard said, and that would be my first response, to the question is that we probably have more resources available in this election than ever before to fact-check the candidate's statements. There are lots of good online resources that people can check out, factcheck.org, which is run out of the Annenberg Center at the University of Pennsylvania. PolitiFact is another useful website. They partner with the Plain Dealer, so they cover lots of Ohio issues. And the fact-check site at the Washington Post, Glenn Kessler runs. It does an excellent job on national issues. So I think there are a lot of resources out there, but as Howard said, part of the problem is getting people to those resources. And there what we find consistently in studies of political communication is that people self-select. They tend to pay attention to media messages that reinforce their own pre-existing views. So along with partisan polarization, we get media polarization, where increasingly partisans gravitate to certain websites or TV networks, cable news stations, whatever it might be, that reinforce their pre-existing views. So I think the resources are there, but it's a challenge to get people in touch with those.
We've had two debates, one more to go. Do these debates really make a difference?
The political science literature seems to suggest that, for the most part, no. On the other hand, the studies that have been done that show an impact do show, you know, between 1 and 3 point impact. And, you know, you think about a close race, and certainly you look at 2000 again, you have to think that, geez, 600 voters couldn't have been swayed by the debates. I think that they're in a close race on the margins. I think they matter. I think in this race, the reason they become so important is this: there's a kind of an in-man, out-man strategy going on here in terms of Romney's strategy. Was, you know, one, you're going to run against the incumbent and say the incumbent's not doing a good job, but that's not enough to win ordinarily. What you need to do is you need to present yourself as a viable alternative. You ran into this in New York. They had a congressional election. Tom Reynolds was involved in a huge scandal that involved Mark Foley from Florida and Pages. It was a really bad scandal, and he was done. He was going to lose his election. The problem was that the alternative candidate, the Democrats had a millionaire candidate named Jack Davis, who was not a very good candidate. You really couldn't even put him in front of the public without fearing that he would say something ridiculous. And so they just kind of hid him away for 3 months and said, you're going to win the election, just stay away from the media because we don't want you to screw it up. And in the end, Tom Reynolds won that race. And so in this case, you had the debates. The debates were key because it allowed Romney to present himself in a way that I think contrasted fairly starkly with the media images that people had seen on their televisions. And so people looked at Romney and said, yeah, he could be president. And that's was really key to his campaign. And so the debates in this case, I think, were important because they allowed Romney that opportunity. Now, whether or not he wins or not, that's another topic. But he needed that moment. He needed people to take a look at him and say, yeah, I can see him being president. Same reason that Barack Obama in 2008 was putting, went to Germany and did speeches in foreign lands, and he had presidential seal put on his, because he wanted people to see, hey, I could see Barack Obama as president. That was a very big moment for him when people could picture the first black president. For a lot of people, that was fiction, you know. And this was, you know, to make it reality was really key for Obama. To make the same thing for Romney, to make it people see him as president, was really key, and the debates allowed him to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think particularly the first debate, it's the only explanation for the bump in the polls, is that they were able to look at him and say, okay, well, I can imagine him in the White House. Yeah.
And so with all of that, why is there so much, do you think, an attack on the media during the debates? I mean, Jim Lehrer came off with nothing but bad comments. Martha Raddatz generally was thought pretty highly of. Candy Crowley, it depends on who you talk to, if they thought anybody thought she did a good job. And is it Bob Schieffer, I think, coming up next?
Yeah.
Why so much focus on the media?
I don't know. I mean, that's why I don't like to do those things, you know, even on a local level. I mean, you do become a target of it, you know. I mean, it's a very difficult job to try to moderate one of these things and to try to keep it fair and keep it balanced and not interject yourself into it.
And part of it, I think, is in advance working the next referee, right? You want the next referee to not want to be subject to the same criticism. And so on the Democratic side, when President Obama didn't do well in that first debate, at least that was the impression. So you had, an effort to say, okay, listen, we want the next moderator to not allow Mitt Romney to speak over the president or do this. And so you're trying to work the refs to get an advantage. That is part of it. The other part of it is you want to explain away the things that your candidate didn't do well. And so, well, it wasn't, you know, my candidate's fault. It was, you know, the moderator's fault for not doing X, Y, or Z.
It's like baseball. If you lose, you blame the umpire.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say, we don't hear too many winners complaining about the moderator or the referees.
Right.
So I think it's just one of those jobs that's a thankless job, and it's almost impossible to win universal acclaim as a debate moderator. I think the second debate, it was really interesting. One of the things I was looking forward to watching is how the moderator behaved, because the campaigns had actually reached an agreement ahead of time that essentially limited the moderator's role to calling out the questions. And that was about it. And, of course, Candy Crowley did more than that. And as you said, Marianne, it depends who you're talking to as to whether that was a good thing or not. But I think it's, you know, much like the referees in the NFL, everybody booed the replacements and wanted the regular referees back, and now they're booing the regular referees. So.
Yeah, I think there's also an ideological component for this from the perspective of Republican candidates, I think, is that Republican candidates always fear, and I think to some extent they have some reason for this, is that the most people in the media are generally not Republican. And, this is kind of like going into a big playoff baseball game where, you know, and you're playing the Yankees, and you know that all the umpires are from New York. You're going to, even when there's not bias, you're going to see it. And that doesn't mean there's a subtle, change, a subtle, I'm not exactly sure what I'm saying, but I think that the Republicans generally are very concerned about this because they don't feel a lot of in common with the media.
This question from Barry: what should voters from states that are considered non-battleground states think about the candidates never visiting their states during the election?
They should be grateful.
Yeah. they should go to the polls on election day and vote for whom they choose and be grateful.
Do you think it's off-putting at all to anybody? But
Well, it probably is off-putting to some voters, but the fact is, you know, there's about 10 to 12 states where the candidates are going to spend their time and they're not going elsewhere. You know, I mean, the last candidate I can recall who pledged to visit all 50 states was Richard Nixon in 1960, you know, and it was ridiculous.
It probably cost him the election, too,
if you think about
resources.
Exactly.
Any other final? The economy is certainly the topic for many during this election. What else should the candidates be focusing on this last few weeks, or what do you expect they'll be focusing on?
Women. I think the key group in this election has always been, in my mind, upper third income women. That was the group in 1994 that moved sharply away from the Democratic Party. If you look at the American National Election Study, the biggest change was among wealthy women. That's the group to watch.
Yes. Stephen?
I agree with that. I think the other thing that we'll see more of over the last few days is a push on the Romney side for Obama to articulate a positive agenda for the next 4 years. I think we're already hearing that in the wake of the second debate. I think Obama's criticisms of Romney's plans have been pretty effective, but now the question is, he's given people reasons to vote against Romney. He probably will need to give voters more reasons to give him a second term, and it'll be interesting to see if he can make that case. The third debate will be particularly fascinating because it's supposed to be about foreign policy issues. I don't think there's a whole lot of daylight between these candidates on most of the major foreign policy issues.
I'm going to give Howard a chance to respond because we're out of time. Howard, what do you think they're going to talk about?
Well, I agree with Mac entirely. Women voters, that's going to be the big push, and you can see it in the Obama campaign this week and the kind of things that they're doing in Ohio, traveling through, and the message that Obama has to put out involves basically what he said during his speech in Charlotte.
Thank you all for being here. We're out of time, but the election continues.
Thanks.
Or the campaign continues. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were Xavier University Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Mac Mariani, University of Cincinnati's McMicken College of Arts and Sciences Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Stephen Mockaby, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.
Support comes from the Murray and Agnes Season Good Good Government Foundation, encouraging citizen participation in public affairs.